Thank you. And I don't know, is anyone else in the room a computer scientist? So do I. But I guess I'm going to talk about work that we've been doing that hopefully you'll get an idea of why I'm here, being one of the few computer scientists out here. I will also talk about what our vaccine center is to give you a little bit of context. And even though I do get invited to a lot of conferences on vaccines in Asia, our center has nothing to do specifically with vaccines, but I'll talk about the work we've been doing in helping people make effective decisions from mountains of data for both public health and crime analytics, and show you how this can be applied. And so I'll start off our center. It stands for Visual Analytics for Command, Control, and Interoperability Environments. We have 25 schools in 4 countries and about 75 faculty. We create a lot of different ways to help people create interactive systems to help them make decisions from their data. Here's very quickly a list of the schools that we have involved, and you can see we range from the size of the Purdue, Georgia Tech, Penn State, down to the size of Navajo Technical College. We have a number of Canadian partners. We have partners in the UK and in Germany currently. And so what we really are trying to do is see how we can make people more effective in doing their job. And this is really a case of bringing an interdisciplinary team together. I've used multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary. I haven't tried using transdisciplinary yet. Maybe after today I'll have to go over to that. But we have cognitive psychologists, we have economists, we have computer scientists, we have signal processing people, we have statisticians, we have a lot of domain people. Probably for me the most unusual invitation that I got was to give a talk at the World Pork Expo, where we had to understand whether or not for the pork board, whether there was power in the room for us to do a PowerPoint presentation in the barn. But so it gives us a chance to really work with these different things. But really the idea is, can we provide people with the right information from the sea of data in the amount of time they need for the decision in the environment they're at so that they can be more effective? And so we've been doing this with all of the projects that we have being driven by the actual problems that people have. And to give you some examples related to health applications, we started off early on working with our State Department of Health. They were trying to see if they could come up with a way of getting more effective decision-making than what's available by commonly used surveillance systems such as the Essence technology. And working with the epidemiologist, he said, I want to come in the morning, and instead of getting a rank list of statistics of what are the unusual health events, I want to see a map of what happened, where were the alerts. We get about 110 alerts per day in Indiana. It takes about 30 to 60 minutes to investigate each alert, so his job is which ones are worth my time. So here's an example of looking at our system where you can pull up one of the hotspots, you can pull up the actual signal, see what generated the alert, see what the control chart is to understand why it was generated, and then from there you can actually go in and refine the query, see what caused the alert, see if there, this was an animated slide that apparently transferring to their system didn't work well. But basically, instead of just looking at gastrointestinal, you can look at gastrointestinal and fever to try to narrow it down, see what the response was yesterday, see what it is today, and find out for this alert that was generated, you were expecting 0 cases and 1 case occurred, probably not a large medical emergency. And so the goal with this was to reduce the number of false positives while still having no missing any true positives. And so this was combined into a system to help them take this information in. And with that, what we really do is we break the data down into time series so that we look for annual growth trends, we look for interannual trends, we look at monthly trends, seasonal trends, day of week trends, and time of day trends, so that from pulling those signals out and doing that analysis, you can actually get a better idea for staffing and planning, and also understand when you have a true anomaly with very noisy data, which you tend to get from emergency department data. And we're currently expanding this to work in doing public health surveillance in Pakistan right now and 5 hospitals there, and adapting the system to see what you would actually go to a hospital in Pakistan for, since they aren't the primary care provider as emergency departments tend to be here. I've also done work in looking at disease spread and interdiction technologies, where you can actually look and see with mosquito-borne illnesses, with other type of illnesses, what is actually causing. If you have a model of how the disease is spread and you're going to take different measures against it, you can see what the effect of those are. And with a lot of diseases, actually taking action can make the problem worse. So this is a way of simultaneously looking at the spatial spread, looking at the consequent space, and allowing you to compare your different strategies. We've also done pandemic work. And then this sort of led into taking the work that we learned there. At the time, I didn't sort of realize it would relate to the topic of this panel today, but we started working when we got our Homeland Security Center of Excellence, working with public safety officials and law enforcement. How can we apply these techniques to help them? So we actually took the tools that we had honed for doing public health disease surveillance and started applying them to crime, and actually found that their predictive value was surprisingly similar. And so we can actually, with 60 days of data, predict 7 to 14 days in the advance in the future to give people a good idea of what they're going to expect in their area. And so we really are developing these techniques to help people start from the long-term planning, going through detection of events, look at ways of changing their staffing, how do they respond and investigate and then recover from this. And I'll talk about 2 applications there where this type of what was originally epidemiologically based approach is working for crime. And one is what we call our Visual Analytics Law Enforcement Toolkit and an iPad-based version of this. And then I'll also talk about our gang graffiti work. And so with the Valet Toolkit, we've deployed it to about 5 different departments right now in Indiana. And the idea here is to allow you to actually go in and understand patterns, understand anomalies, look for correlations, and try to get a better idea of the criminal activity that you're seeing. Let's see, so this animation is actually working. So you have map view, and the way this is a little bit different than if you're used to ArcGIS products is that this is really an interactive guided interface to the back-end database, so you can seamlessly scroll through time, you can change your different levels of aggregation, see the patterns, you can select either a given hotspot here, update the counts that you're getting, update the temporal distribution in a calendar view. You can see the time series, so with the crime that we're looking at here, you're seeing that there's somewhat of a seasonal pattern that's going on with the crimes. You can look at the time of day of the occurrence of the data so that you can find specific regions, and as you select certain regions on the map, you can see how the time of day patterns differ. The calendar view clearly shows you, in this case, you're seeing a lot of events taking place on Sunday and Monday and on Saturday. And then you can go down, select the individual crimes that are occurring, as I mentioned, scroll through time, and you can also put in there to correlate against the crime activity, interactive anomaly detection from Twitter messages, Flickr, and YouTube to try to start correlating social media into this. So this was really done because our sheriff came to us and said, we've got all of the county's data from 4 different police departments in one system. You know, now what do we do with it? How do I use this to tell, have we done anything to reduce crime? When I go to the county commission, I work with our GIS people to say what's happened. It takes me about a day to generate the maps that I want to produce. And I want something where I can easily use it and understand what's going on, but I also want something where I can give it to the people who are doing, the sergeants who are doing the briefings of the officers to say, what happened yesterday, what should you expect out there today? And also, when an officer gets a call, what will help him be more aware before he knocks on that door to understand what similar things have occurred in this area that may be related. And so that's really what we've built into the system. Here you can see the fact that we have the link predictive model in there, so that when we're looking at the signal and we're looking 13 days into the future, this is the window that we're saying it should occur, and here is the actual data that did occur for that period. But we try to do this so that people can choose individual things that they're interested in. And we were recently asked, when our police chief was part of a coalition by Purdue University who's looking at crime, looking at reducing high-risk alcohol behavior. There's 57 schools across the country that have started this campaign. And when they were talking about doing some spatial analysis, he said, oh, well, we've got a tool at Purdue you could use for this. And so we started looking at it and got data in that combines criminal reports, reports from dormitories on campus, and also all of the emergency runs and the results of those emergency runs, whether they were treated and released, sent to the hospital, or sent to jail as the outcome of being called. And so they wanted to know, can you show us what patterns we're seeing? Can you put the licensed liquor establishment, see what the relation of those are to these type of activities? And one of the things you'll see is on a college campus, not surprising, Saturday night is the highest alcohol behavior. You don't see a lot on Mondays and Wednesdays. Tuesday's actually higher. They believe it's because all the bars are, it's a low sales night, so they think they're running a lot of Tuesday specials to get people in there. And it's not surprising that most of this occurs between midnight and 3 a.m. So not too much surprising. You see that there is a strong pattern that's occurring, and that's actually relating to home and away football games. And so then they were saying, you know, is a win or loss of the game, is it home or is it away, that has a big effect. And it actually tends to be more the opponent that's playing, how big of a game it is. We found other interesting things, that there's a correlation between drunken, disorderly events that occur and accidents the following day, with over $1,000 of damage. Of course, these are both just samples of how big of an event it is on campus. It isn't that people are getting arrested, going out, and still being drunk 12 hours later and getting in accidents. If you have more people being drunk and disorderly, you find out that it's a bigger crowd, so you have more accidents the next day. So they can actually use that for predictive policing and improve the safety. The other thing that was interesting to find out is most of the people that get arrested for drunk and disorderly are actually alums in the order of 5 to 10 years away from campus. Because they forget where the police tend to hang out, and the college students tend to know that more and aren't driving, according to the wisdom of our police chief. But they're using this to try to go and target campaigns and bring this information in and see the effectiveness of new laws that are passed so that people won't get thrown, and new campus policies so you won't get thrown out if you're doing underage drinking and it results in these incidents. So some of the hottest spots are actually the safe drop zones, and the biggest partying fraternity actually had no incidents reported there, but a nearby safe drop zone had a lot of incidents, and who knows if there's any correlation, of course. So they're actually using this to try to see if they can predict what's going on and come up with ways and see if they can actually do that. We have in the fact that you can actually do the real-time Twitter monitoring so that you can see relationships of unusual tweets. So on Friday and Saturday nights, you don't actually get party that comes out the most, because that occurs every time. But if there's 10 people who tweet shooting, that would be an anomaly. And you can look at this. Although this is actually for a spring weekend where Purdue has something called the Grand Prix weekend, which is a race. And there's something on the Purdue campus called the Breakfast Club, where bars open at 6 a.m. And so you actually see Breakfast Club popping up as unusual tweets. In the fall, it wouldn't be as unusual because it happens every football game. So it is pulling that out. But the question that we're trying to do is see if we can give a tool to help them understand this behavior and then take preventative mechanisms. And as they're using this now through the fall and through the spring in terms of targeting certain groups, they'll actually be able to do very easily see the effect of all of the outcomes that they're doing. We have this running on iPhones and iPads and have it for the general public, so you can see what areas had crime occurring near where you are, of certain types of crime that you're interested in, and if you have a path you're planning on walking or driving, what crimes occurred during this time of day along that path, so you could decide whether or not you want to see it. Once we start getting into the mobile interactive environment, we start bringing in other things. We have a hazmat application that runs on your Android phone, where you can take a picture of a hazmat sign if there's a spilled tanker. It pulls up real-time weather information, links that in, and you can get plume modeling showing you not only where to evacuate, how many people to evacuate. We can also then pull in all the gang-related documented information with the crimes on that environment. And that leads into the work that we're trying to do with gang identification, where we have an application that's currently being used by over 60 police officers from 20 different jurisdictions in Indiana. We've restricted it right now. Last night, I got an email from a police officer in San Antonio wanting the application. There's a Discover magazine story done about it in September, and we seem to be getting a lot of people across the country wanting it. Unfortunately, there's not an easy way to validate police officers on a nationwide registry unless you would send the request to the FBI, and my law enforcement colleagues normally say that's a one-way street and that you can send information to them but nothing comes back. So we've restricted it to, we have our state police who are currently validating police officers. We're going to create a separate database for Illinois because we're having a lot of interest from Cook County. We also are setting up a mirror database on the Navajo Nation, where students at Navajo Tech are actually recording and working with their police department. But what this application does is it allows you to take a picture of gang graffiti. It records the geolocation of it. It allows you to find similar graffiti that has been noticed. It allows you to add annotation. It does color recognition and some simple symbol recognition right now based on the symbols that are most prevalent from the gangs in the Indianapolis area. And so the local officers in Indianapolis basically said that our gang detective who's worked with it the most says he gets images sent to him from police departments around the state. He gets multiple requests per day of people saying these signs just showed up. What does it mean? Which gang is it? Because there's so many gangs. There's a lot of small departments that don't have the opportunity to have gang experts. And so he sees this database as a way for him to replicate himself and provide that information so that people can just do the searches themselves for this. And so here's a picture from this, and I did have the student put in some false locations of gang graffiti around the Moscone Center in case you're interested in seeing the app on the Android phone, because we don't have any from here, and I wasn't going to go around the city looking for high gang activity areas and sitting there and try to take readings, which we try to be very careful of, making sure when we go out with gang detectives, there's three police officers with every student who goes with them to make sure students get anxious and would like to set up high-def cameras to get good color calibration in gang-infested areas. And it's just not really smart. Luckily, we're in a very safe community, so locally we don't have too much problems there. But as you know, symbols and colors are very important. The good thing is it doesn't matter which shade of blue it is. Is it blue? Is it red? Is it green? Is it black? These are the important thing. It's whatever spray paint they can actually gather. And Immigrations and Customs Enforcement and Border Customs and Border Patrol are also interested in getting these applications. But it allows you to record and do some analysis on your mobile phone. It does some of it on a server. You can search for similar things. You can also then go ahead and see what crime has occurred in these areas. And it has the ability to track the history of all the graffiti located at that individual space, because the city is trying to remove graffiti within 24 hours of being notified. Also, for prosecution of the cases, it's very important for them to have the documentation of what time was it recorded, what information did people observe on it, when was there an X painted over that gang's tag and a new sign appeared next to it from a rival gang, so that they can use this for illegal prosecution. So we're trying to factor all of those factors in that are important to them. And so, like I said, we're currently figuring out, being a university, how do we go from having 10 to 20 to 30 departments using it to go to nationwide, because we only want police officers to get a hold of this, and we're not in the, most universities aren't in the business of supporting software 24 hours a day. So we're looking for, and that's a challenge that most federally funded projects like this face, in getting from the small scale or medium scale pilots to nationwide deployment. So that sort of shows the type of things, as I mentioned, you've got all the symbols and some letter recognition that goes on, pulling out the individual colors, tagging the fact that you now have an X over the 18 and a new symbol painted from the 13. So these are the type of things that you really want to be careful for. And it's something that if you have more interest, I will allow you to, we just have an email address, Gary, the name of the software, that you can send information. We can give you more details on it. And as we go beyond the state of Indiana and start opening up additional states, which having one centralized database, we need to get all the law enforcement agencies to have MOUs in place to share the information. Right now we have it across the state of Indiana. So as we add new states, we'll initially create independent databases, and then as they work out their agreements of sharing the legal information, we'll allow them to all be linked together. So, thank you.